Who's Recorded Future?
Ah, Recorded Future. They're marvellous. They are very generously supporting the podcast this week.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
They are the real-time threat intel firm, and they use machine learning technology to analyse the open and the dark web to give people greater insight into emerging threats, what's really going on out there.
And do they share that information with people like us?
Oh, yeah. So you can either sign up to be one of their customers, obviously, or you can get their free Cyber Daily newsletter and get the latest insights in your inbox at no charge whatsoever. All you have to do is go to recordedfuture.com/intel.
Recordedfuture.com/intel?
That's right. And thanks to Recorded Future for their support of the show.
I fed you every line there, Graham.
Smashing Security, Episode 32. The iPhone 8, a data breach of the AA, and a mystery no-show, with Carol Terrio and Graham Cluley.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Smashing Security. Smashing Security, episode 32. And my name is Graham Cluley, and I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy, Carol Terrio. Hello, Carol, how are you?
Hello, Graham. I'm very well.
You still out in Canada, are you?
I am. And you'll see I have a bit of a frog in my throat. I got a bit of a cold from my niece. So I hope I sound clear.
Is she French-Canadian as well?
No, she's Canadian. She's not really French-Canadian. Oh, okay. And she's three.
So you can't blame that then.
Yeah.
Okay. And
now, who's our guest today?
Oh, well, I'm a bit worried, actually, because he should be here. We were expecting antivirus industry veteran to be joining us today, but he hasn't shown up yet. So I hope he's all right. Now, in his defense, we are actually recording this on the morning of July the 4th.
And he's not waking up with a hangover then.
Well, he might start celebrating Independence Day early. Who knows? Maybe. He is American, so I don't quite know. I mean, maybe he'll be joining us later on. Let's hope so. But shall we just... I mean, you've got a plane to catch and things, haven't you?
I have a plane to catch, so I think we should just crack on.
Shall we just crack on?
Short and sweet.
If joins us later, then that'll be fantastic. Hokey cokey. Well, let me tell you what I'm going to talk about today. It's an interesting topic, which is about the AA, not Alcoholics Anonymous, Carol. No. I know that's what you were thinking. This is the Automobile Association, which sounds rather grand, doesn't it? It is the British Automobile Association. They are the fellows in the yellow vans who come out and rescue you when your car blows up and try and sort you out.
I've called them. They've been amazing with me. I've only had but great experiences with them, actually.
Yep. Me too. They're absolutely fantastic. If your fan belt snaps, they are the people who you want to call. Now, unfortunately, something a little bit odd appears to be happening with the AA because it looks like they've had a bit of a security incident.
Okay. I haven't read anything about this because I've been on, you know, Canada Day family. So I'm sitting here with my popcorn.
Grab your popcorn and I will tell you the story.
Okay.
So story starts in April. Somebody found that the AA's online store, which in fairness is run by a third party, appears to have made a boo-boo.
Okay.
Because a backup database of user information, things like names, email addresses, partial credit card details, had been left exposed. And so this guy was able to download details of hundreds of thousands of AA customers.
This guy being a security pundit or a baddie?
One assumes a good guy.
Because
he informed the AA of the problem, and a few days later, it appears that the problem was then fixed. And he said to them in June now, so this was a couple of months later, because he was waiting for the AA to send a message to its customers.
What, a message saying that he found this problem?
Well, a message saying that, you know, your data was exposed, there's a potential for it to have fallen into the hands of bad guys or, you know, whatever they were happening.
And this is a UK company, right? This is AA in the UK?
Yeah, AA in the UK, yes. I don't know how they operate internationally.
Okay, carry on. Okay.
And AA responded to this guy and said, well, you know, thank you very much for telling us about the problem and everything. Regarding telling our customers, we are following internal AA policies. I think you can read between the lines on that.
isn't there an act, that a legislation in the UK that says you have to tell customers in this instance if their data's been exposed?
I think it depends on the absolute severity of what has occurred and what information. I would lean more towards informing customers, and certainly informing the Information Commissioner's Office, the ICO, the regulatory body who look after these things, if an incident has occurred, so that they can determine what's gone wrong and what remediation may need to take place.
If this happens after GDPR comes through, that's going to, anyway, okay,
yes,
carry on. Yeah,
that's
listen,
right. Well,
go listen to that episode. Go
listen to
that
our
episode.
Previous episode if you want to know all about GDPR and the implications there. So anyway, the breach was discovered in April. There was no notification to customers. May, no notification to customers. June, no notification to customers.
Okay.
And
so a little sweeping under the carpet action.
Well, potentially. It suddenly looked a little bit odd. And it was round about then, at the end of June, that people started receiving a very strange email from the AA.
Purporting to be from the AA or from the AA?
Well, jump ahead here, right?
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
So the AA itself was tweeting out a warning to people saying, whoa, if you get an email which appears to come from us talking about a password reset, please don't act upon the email. Don't click on the link. Don't phone us up. And people were very confused about this because the link really did go to the AA's website and the phone number really was the AA.
So they're thinking, why would someone do that if it was for nefarious purposes?
Yes. And a few hours later, the AA came out and they said, well, look, the email was legitimately from us, but it was sent in error.
Okay.
An accident occurred. But there were still some customers who were very confused about this because some customers reported that they had tried to log into the AA website and their passwords had stopped working. There was one user on Twitter who had actually contacted AA's support team via the telephone, and they claimed that they were told that the AA had been hacked.
Ooh.
And yet the AA was now sending emails to people saying, there's been no hack, there's been no data breach. Don't panic, everybody. Please forget that email which we sent
stinks.
You about the password reset.
This all smells a bit fishy, doesn't it? Like, I would, if I was involved in this, I would be going, something's going on.
It's so curious, isn't it?
Yeah.
It may be that email was sent entirely in error, right? I have no reason to believe that it was connected to the earlier security breach. But all of this talk of the email, of course, got people thinking about the earlier breach, and people started talking about that more. And people started saying to the AA, hang on, you had some kind of credit card breach. Data was compromised.
It was exposed back in April.
And the AA then went round like headless chickens on Twitter trying to calm everyone down, saying, all these media reports of us having a breach, they're full of misconceptions, they're full of inaccuracies, and none of our credit card data has been exposed.
Okay.
Hmm.
And who's saying this? This is like what, the CEO or...? Official communications from AA.
Official communications from the AA were saying this. And meanwhile, the BBC were reporting that there appeared to have been a breach, and Motherboard and other sites and security researchers like Troy Hunt were tweeting about this as well. And Troy, for instance, was confirming with people in that database which had been exposed that they were indeed AA customers. And yes, the partial credit card information contained in that database did match their credit card numbers. And yet still, the AA said, nothing happened. There was a problem. We fixed it on our store website, but credit card information has not been compromised.
Oh, God, this is like 101, how not to handle a situation like this.
Well, that's what I think. And this morning, what I did, we're recording this on Tuesday, just everyone knows. We'll put this out on Thursday. But this morning on Tuesday, I posted a blog post because I've seen all this and I thought, hang on a minute. I got my hands on a screenshot of some of the credit card data, the part of the AA database containing people's credit card information, expiry dates, the last four digits of the credit card number, as well as there was additional information in the databases such as the user's names and contact details and so forth. And I posted a redacted version of that on my website and said, this doesn't make sense because this looks like credit card data to me, but the AA say none of it has been exposed. And do you know what happened?
No.
Well, the AA got in touch with me and he suggested that I should take the screenshot down fairly urgently because he believed I was in breach of the Computer Misuse Act.
That's
which
That sounds a bit panicky. Oh, dear. Okay, so he tells you your story. Basically, he doesn't like your story.
He doesn't like my story. And he says that it's full of misconceptions and it's inaccurate.
And you asked him to clarify those misconceptions?
Absolutely. So fantastic. I'm hoping he's going to get back to me with a statement, which I can publish at the end of my article, and I will link to that. Obviously, I want to give him a platform.
Yeah.
But so far, all he's sort of said to me is that no passwords were changed in the email error episode. Well, you know, I didn't necessarily say that they were. I just said that some customers reported they couldn't get in.
Right.
Also, he's saying no credit card information was compromised. And it's just like, well, I can see some. And other security researchers are saying they see some as well. So it feels very shambolic. It feels like a complete mess. I prefer to think that rather than deliberately trying to cover up the facts.
Well, if they want advice on how to handle it, I'm happy to speak to the AA.
Carol offering her services as a PR crisis expert.
Yes. I'll even do it pro bono. This could be handled much, much better. Because the problem with handling it like this is they're gonna lose trust with their customers. If people don't feel like they trust you, they don't want to be with you. And there's a lot of competitors, right, to the AA.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are some big competitors. That's certainly true. But I mean, the thing is this, a breach can happen to any organization.
Absolutely.
No one's immune to a security incident happening. And I have sympathy for that happening. You know, we don't know the full details of how this particular one happened. It sounds like there was a third party involved as well, who may have some culpability. Who knows? However, if something like this happens, the first thing you need to think about are your customers and being open and transparent with them.
It's their data that's breached.
Right.
Right. Like, sure, it's your systems that are maybe compromised, but you just need to put a bit of mortar in there and get it fixed, you know, plug the leak. But it's their data's gone.
You want to do everything you can to avoid the perception of a cover-up. I mean, No, Graham.
Do not want to do a cover-up. Right?
No, I'm
not in this situation.
It's not perception.
It's not just perception. Right? It's don't do a cover up.
Right. Yeah. Don't cover it up. But, you know, avoid any chance that someone might mistake it as potentially being a cover up. I mean, right. Nixon, right? Richard Milhouse Nixon. What did him? It wasn't so much the bugging of the Watergate building. It was the cover up afterwards, which eventually got rid of him. And that is what so many organizations need to learn, is you will get in much worse mess than the data breach if you fumble and screw up your customer communications and they lose your trust.
So my free advice to them right now in this situation is for the head honcho to write a blog article detailing what's happened in a timeline fashion, going back to April and to date now, explaining it to the customers. And it should be open and, you know, for all of us to read. He doesn't have to go into details about the breach or how the hack worked, because if he doesn't know, but he should be able to kind of explain the process of, you know, because we know we've been in these situations. We know information dribbles out in a non-orderly fashion, and you have to piece all these things together to figure out what happened. Sometimes it takes a while and it sucks.
And actually, you can turn a disaster into something actually positive, because you can actually grow more trust by being more open and honest with people. I think you're right. I mean, it's been a bit of a mess. It's not completely unrecoverable, but it feels to me like they've got themselves in a much worse mess than even the original data breach could have potentially caused.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think if anything else happens before publishing on Thursday, we could maybe add just a little update just to make it more timely for our listeners. Right, Graham? Great. Over to Ed's topic. Graham, I can't wait to hear what you're going to talk about today.
He's not here, Carol. Seriously, I hope he's all right.
Okay, of course. Okay, 99%. He's probably all right, right? He's probably just slept in, or he's forgotten about it, or he doesn't use his calendar.
How could you forget about the Smashing Security podcast?
Okay, honestly, I am hurt. Okay, I'm a little hurt, but I am, right? I like this thing, and this has never happened to us before, you know?
It's not like other people wouldn't want to be on.
Right.
Javad Malik the other week, he was very keen.
Yeah, John Hawes was really keen.
John Hawes, oh, he's excellent.
Yeah, and we have Michael Hux coming in next week. He's confirmed.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, we've had him once before. He's great.
Fantastic.
So, anyway, we hope you're okay. But if you are okay, where are you?
Carol, over to you. What is your story of the week?
Okay, well, I want to talk about iPhone's 10th anniversary.
Okay.
And that is coming up. And rumors have it that Apple is preparing a quite an exciting launch to celebrate this anniversary. So for the first time, there's going to be three phones available, and they're expected this fall, two of which are going to be upgraded versions of the current models. But one is a top-of-the-line kind of handset with a completely overhauled look. And this is all according to Bloomberg. So predicted features. Now, of course, we all know that Apple keep this very close to their chest, and people, you know, and they put out loads of prototypes to be tested, to be produced, to try and kind of confuse it. So it's quite fun. It's a bit like a movie, you know? Now, so predicted features include a curved glass front, a stainless steel housing, better color display, so like deeper blacks, whiter whites, camera.
I've always got a problem with the blacks and the whites on my iPhone. What do people like?
Okay,
how
you
good
know
are
what,
people's
though?
Eyesight that they need that sort of stuff?
You should go and Google the darkest black. And there's great YouTube videos about the deepest black. They can only produce a tiny amount every year, but it's as dark as anything. It's the darkest black ever.
Oh, really?
It's quite cool. It's really cool how they do it. You should go watch.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so they're also looking at, Apple's also looking at testing faster processors, right? Based on smaller 10 nanometer production. Now, that's down from 16 nanometers, which is what's in current existing phones. And smaller processors are quite cool because they're more efficient. And they will help you provide more features, allowing Apple to retain battery life while giving you new cool stuff. So that's quite a cool balancing act that they've got to face.
You know what I'd like?
What would
I feel like? Yeah, because I know Tim Cook is listening to this, right?
Yes,
right
of course
now.
He
of course,
is.
He's a big fan of the show.
Steve Jobs probably isn't.
Please.
Okay, go on. Okay, so Tim Cook's not listening, but what feature would you like to
do? Anyway, look, listen.
I'm listening.
They keep on shaving off more millimeters to make the phone even skinnier, right?
Mm.
I don't need a skinnier phone. I need a phone which has got a fatter battery, right? That's what I actually want. I don't want something which is skinny. And I also don't want one of those clown shoe phones. You know these. You know they now have these enormous. Samsung do it, and there's the iPhone 7S. Is it the 7S? The stupidly large one, which makes me look like I've got hands the size of Donald Trump.
Well, you do.
Well, okay. Okay, my hands are quite small. That's true. But anyway, I just don't want anything. I don't want anything which emphasizes it even more. So can we just have a better battery full stop rather than trying to squeeze everything into a smaller space?
You know, it's interesting. So my niece and nephew have been hanging out with family, right? They're what, 8 and 10, right?
Yeah.
They have these ginormous kind of cases they put around their phones, their little iPods.
Yeah.
They're not phones, but like iPod stuff that they're playing with. Like huge, looks like a monster. And the other one looks like an old rotary phone on the back.
Okay.
But it's like twice the size of the phone in terms of width.
Is this to protect them if they drop them or something?
Well, I think it's cute. I think it does protect it, but three, I think it's easier for them to hold and see the screen because they have their little hands and they hold, you know, they're holding this plastic bit in their arms and they can see the full screen without their fingers kind of, you know.
So you're saying that I have the hands of a 7-year-old girl. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying lots of people might prefer a larger phone, you know, with more battery than a very skinny thing. Anyway, okay, well, Graham, I'm sure Tim Cook heard you. It'll be in the next
Sorry for the interruption.
No, it's fine, now, one of the cool changes is they want to do away with the bezel, so the edge around the screen where the home button sits.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem with that is if the home button disappears, do we say bye-bye to Touch ID fingerprint scanning? Right? Because that's what we use. So some have suggested, so people are thinking, if they're going to make the whole front of the screen, an actual screen, where's the button going to go? Some have suggested it might move to the side or the back of the phone.
Yeah, the back. I think some Android phones have their sort of fingerprint scanning on the back of the phone.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that would annoy the heck out of me, actually.
Okay.
I think it would feel that I was locking my phone. You know, I would be touching it all the time in a way that would be annoying. And also, what about phone cases? Anyway, doesn't matter. But some are suggesting that actually what's actually going to happen is they're going to introduce 3D-based facial recognition sensors combined with like eye scanning technology. So users, rather than using their like thumbprint or index print, will actually scan their face and eyes in order to log in.
All right.
I know. I felt weird. When I first read this, I was thinking, you know, first they collect all our fingerprints. Now they want to know all our, you know, our facial mapping and eyes, eye scans.
Although, to be fair, okay, when they did the fingerprint thing, Apple was quite good. It wasn't as though your fingerprint data was going to Cupertino so they could put it in some evil database.
Yeah.
It was kept in a secure enclave, I think they called it, on the actual device. So they were keeping it very securely. And I would imagine if they are going to do any kind of 3D facial recognition, eye scanning stuff, I think Apple will be very, very conscious of that. And they will want to store that securely on the device rather than, frankly, they don't want to hold that kind of toxic data. Who wants to store that data? Because if it ever was breached, that'd be a problem for them.
So right now, this is the problem that they've been having with government authorities who kind of want access. Is that part of a, you know, is that kind of, so they're basically saying we can't access, we can't decrypt a phone.
Well, yeah, they store this information very securely, exactly. And so they will not jump through hoops for law enforcement. And that's why law enforcement finds it so difficult sometimes to unlock these devices.
I don't know. If the law changed, though, and they're forced, would they be able to access this information and provide it to authorities if they, upon, you know, a specific request, you know?
I guess you could point the phone at your suspect's face or something like that if you have habeas corpus, you know, if you have their body.
It's harder to cut off your face than your fingers, right?
Well, I haven't tried either. Oh, you cut off your finger recently, didn't you?
I do cut my fingers a lot. I do a lot of cooking, so I do have. Now, they're collecting the facial identity data. I agree. They do store it well. I mean, they sell, as you were saying, they sell the phones, right? They don't give you a cheap handset and then sell the data or use that data to sell ads and...
This, I think, is quite an important difference between Apple and some of the other manufacturers out there and some of the other technology companies. Apple charge you an arm and a leg for some of their devices because they want to make money selling the hardware. They want to make money selling you apps and things like that, right? That's how they've made themselves a fortune. There are other companies out there, naming no names, who are much more interested in giving you devices on the cheap. And then they will make money through advertising or collecting your information and monetizing that information instead. So there's a fundamental different approach. And as you can imagine, as you can imagine, working in the security and privacy field, we lean one way a little bit more than the other.
And, you know, I don't know, they're sexy devices. That's the thing. Actually, though, I am going to try and stick with my 6S as long as possible because I really like the whole cable headphone thing. I don't want to I want the cable.
They removed all that, didn't they? To make it skinnier, I think. Yeah. You see? Yeah. You see? But more than that, Crow, it's not just about them being sexy devices. I think the amazing thing about the Apple iPhone, and here we are at the 10th anniversary, the incredible thing is there has been no major malware outbreak for iPhone.
Yep.
That is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary in 10 years, actually. And how many of maybe 20% of mobile phone users use iPhones?
I don't know. There are many more Android users than iPhone, but it clearly
is. That's a serious
market.
You know, I think they do have certainly a dedicated following.
There have sometimes been very targeted attacks. And obviously there are other threats beyond sort of malware. But generally, they've done a really good job. And they've done a good job by, frankly, being, you know, control freaks about what happens on their device. But also, to give them credit, thinking about security and privacy, I think, in a way which other companies maybe could take a lead from.
Yeah. But, you know, I can't help but wonder if, like, you know, the next version, the iPhone 9, is going to have a tiny little needle that pricks into your finger to just do a DNA collection to let you in, you know.
Let's hope it never comes to that. Well, I think it's time probably to thank our sponsor for supporting the show this week.
It is. Smashing Security is made possible by the generous support of Recorded Future. Recorded Future are the real-time threat intel firm whose machine learning technology analyzes the open and dark web to give you great insight into emerging threats. Sign up to their Cyber Daily newsletter and get the latest insights at recordedfuture.com/intel. That's recordedfuture.com/intel. On with the show.
Okay, welcome back to the show, and it is time for our picks of the week.
Pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Our favorite bit of the week, isn't it? Pick of the week.
It is, although mine's not funny. Maybe I should go first. Maybe I should go first because mine's fascinating, but it's not funny. And I know you like funny ones. So I thought, you know, maybe I should go first and you go second.
It's a bit like the "and finally" bit on a news report of the skateboarding duck.
I know exactly.
You want to leave people on a happy note. Have you got something a bit miserable then?
Yeah, but fascinating. Like,
all right, go on then.
Okay, so the reason I'm calling this a tip is that my tip is don't do this. Okay, that's my tip.
Okay, all right.
So this is all about kids, two teens trying to become YouTube celebrities. And they came up with a rather, I don't know, insert modifier here, idea to ramp up their views and subscribers to their YouTube channel, La Mona Lisa. Okay, now La Mona Lisa is a kind of channel that features this couple doing dares and stunts and, you know, a few family videos and that kind of thing. So this was their idea. You tell me what you think. Tell me if you would try this at home, right? So you set up two cameras to capture your wife or your girlfriend firing a gun at you.
Well, hang on a minute.
From a foot away. But don't worry, you have protection in the form of a hard back book. And I think in this case, was an encyclopedia was used in front of your chest. So imagine Mrs. Cluely pointing a gun at your chest, right? A foot away, right?
I can easily imagine that, yes.
Okay. And this guy, Pedro Ruiz, okay, apparently convinced his girlfriend, Mona Lisa Perez, that the book would stop the bullet from a foot away. Okay, now you're thinking, okay, maybe what kind of gun were they using? That was the first question I asked. What kind of gun did they use, right?
Yeah. Maybe something shooting blanks or something.
They didn't use a little, you know, a little 22. They use a Desert Eagle 50 caliber pistol. Now, I, of course, had to Google this knowing absolutely nothing about guns. but was quite shocked to learn that the 50 in that title actually refers to the bullet size. And that means that the bullet is half an inch in diameter. Okay, this gun is a massive handgun. It can shoot, the bullet can go, if uninterrupted, 200 meters is its maximum length.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
That is quite a big bullet. I don't know anything about guns
I'm British. Think about half an inch, right? Like, think about half an inch. It's a huge bullet. It's huge. I'll put links in the story so you can actually go see how much bigger
it
is.
And he's not wearing...
He's wearing an encyclopedia.
I've got a bad feeling about how this is going to end.
Yeah.
So he's not wearing a bulletproof jacket. She's just shooting from a.
Yeah. Close range, through an encyclopedia, into his chest. And yes, it went completely through. Now, what makes this kind of tragic is that he did a bit of testing on this beforehand and he shot it through a stack of books, I think on a bookcase. Right. And he was able to show his friend that the bullet did not go through the entirety of the first book. But of course, the pressure of all those books being together may have made that different, right? It might have changed that. So by taking the book out and just holding it in front of you, and also, like, wouldn't the force of the gun slam that book to your chest so fast? Oh, anyway, I just think it's crazy.
I suppose I don't have to ask. He's died, has he?
He has died.
Oh, my goodness.
She, who's pregnant with their second child, now faces second-degree manslaughter charges. She's looking at a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison or a fine of $20,000 or both. So I thought, God, could this actually be a Darwin Award? Could this be a Darwin Award? So I looked up the Darwin Awards. I know, but come on. It is a silly thing to do. But however, it doesn't, because, you know, yes, you know, he has died. So that's one category, one criteria. Astounding misapplication of judgment, which I think this qualifies. But the problem is that he didn't cause his own demise, did he? Even though it was his plan.
Because he got didn't, someone else.
He didn't pull
to
the
do
cover.
It.
Yeah, he didn't pull the. He didn't pull the trigger.
This is,
but
horrible.
Like, you know, yeah. But this, you know what scares me? What scares me is the like, you must want fame so badly.
Yes, I do.
They wanted to do this for, like, maybe we can get 300,000 subscribers. That was the day before. There's videos that are still on their channel that you can see from the day before and a few hours before, saying we're really hoping for that. Anyway, so this is my tip. Don't do this. You know, when we have to learn, I know you don't like us talking about these kind of things, but I think we have to learn about these things. The more people talk about it, they'll think, okay, not a good idea. Think twice.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh,
okay.
Thanks for sharing your pick of the week. Pick of the week.
Hey, okay, you go. Cheer us up.
All right. Well, I don't know if mine's completely cheery either. So I've been having a few problems with my ear.
True.
Yeah. So I love podcasts. I love nothing more when I go to bed at night.
Me too.
Than to have a little earphone shoved down my ear canal, playing a podcast. Probably this podcast. I just listen to Smashing Security for 8 hours every night. What better way to spend my time?
Okay, I do this. I do this. Are you saying I'm doing something wrong? I do this.
Yeah,
every night.
For goodness sake, you've got to stop doing it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because here's the thing. So I've now become an expert on ears and ear-related diseases.
Dr. Graham is okay. In the house. Tell us everything. EAT.
You know earwax?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, apparently it's nothing to do with being grubby. But earwax is generated in order to get rid of foreign bodies in your ear. And earwax naturally is supposed to come out of your ear, and it typically comes out of your ear at night, right? Now, if you've got your earphones in, your earwax does not come out. And if you keep on wearing earphones all the time, and I'm talking about these in-ear earphones, as it were, then
like the iPhone?
Yeah, exactly,
iPhone?
Like those. Right. And there are many other brands as well.
No, I just mean that there's some that you can also shove into your ear, you know, that kind of seal around the, I guess it's your ear canal?
I'm talking about the ones which actually go in the hole, right?
Okay.
But the point is, earwax is meant to come out, right?
Yep.
So I started I had a bit of sinus trouble the other day, and I started to get some pain in my right ear. And initially I thought, poor diddum. Yeah, exactly. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, we can't actually see what's going on with your eardrum because you've got too much earwax in this particular ear. And I said, okay. So I got that sorted out. Turns out these days they basically use a vacuum cleaner to get rid of earwax, right? They don't syringe it anymore. They've got this little micro suction thing. Very cool. Very cool.
Cool. Okay.
So I went and got it. And so I had the earwax removed, and I thought, once I've done that, I'll be able to hear properly. Because the problem was, when I began to suffer, it felt like my right ear had not popped. And so I was constantly underwater.
Right. Yeah.
And so they got rid of the earwax. And unfortunately, that hasn't changed anything. And I've got some infection or some liquid.
Oh my God.
In my middle ear, which makes me feel like I'm underwater. Yes,
I'm
I know.
Actually I'm shocked because I'm worried about my ears. That's
right. And it's not very pleasant at all. And it can take months to fix. But don't worry about that. You know, I'm getting medication, and it may be that I have to have a little operation.
You're worried
about
that all your listeners are going to send flowers or something? Jesus Christ.
But anyway, there are things which they can do, but it takes a little bit of time. But here's what I discovered. There are these things called sleep earphones or sleep headphones. And they're kind of cool. So, Carole, if you are like me and you love to listen to podcasts and fall asleep listening to podcasts, okay. You can wear this, like, you can get them on Amazon and things like that. There's different priced ones. But you can get, like, these things, which are like a John McEnroe-style headband.
Right.
So it's like, you know, hey, I've just been down the gym or whatever like that. But they have slipped into them very, very flat speakers on the side.
Hey, and that'll help you with your sweating problem as well.
You can get them in different materials. So there are ones which are better for hotter climates and hotter times of the year than others. But anyway, and you can sleep on these quite comfortably, and you can still have your little voice. It's even possible to get wireless ones. Now, I thought that was a bloody stupid idea, to be honest, because why would I want some very clunky Bluetooth device in my headband connected to my phone? So I've got one which is on a wire, but it means I can listen to my podcasts, and there's nothing actually in my ear. And, of course, Mrs. Cluley, hopefully, will not be irritated by any extraneous noise coming from whatever
I'm
recording.
Because I was just thinking about, you know, if someone, you know, because you know how there's like flexible plastics and flexible readers now, like for if you could put a speaker into that, you could actually just have it under your pillowcase, right? Because my mom listens to radio all the time.
Right.
She does it through, she has a tiny speaker that she puts underneath her pillow.
Right.
And then the sound comes through her pillow. Apparently, it doesn't bother my dad at all. And because she doesn't like things in her ear. So, yeah. Interesting. Huh. Well, that's cool. Okay. So I'll look into that.
They're not very expensive. Thank you very much.
Tip.
You might want one.
I think I might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just take care of your ears, right? We want you to carry on listening to the podcast. So look after them.
It's not, there's no other senses they can use, right?
Well, not for podcasts. No.
Exactly.
No. And if you do like the podcast, be sure to go and give us a good review on something like iTunes or Stitcher, or I don't know if you can give reviews on Google Play, but we're
up
there as well.
Have you guys learned how desperate Graham is for reviews? Have you gotten wind of that?
It's the only validation we get, Carole.
I get lots of validation.
Even our guests don't show up anymore.
Oh, my. He didn't show up at all, did he? You're going to have to call him.
I'll give him a call. But I hope that hasn't been too... hope you haven't... missed out too much on this extra short edition of Smashing Security. Carole, thank you for showing up.
I showed up to every single recording.
You have. You've been
so much better than that. So have you. Well done, Graham.
Do you remember that Vanya guy?
Who?
Go to www.smashingsecurity.com. You can leave us a comment up there. You can find our email form as well if you want to drop us a line and a link to our Twitter. But until next time, toodaloo. Bye-bye.
Bye.